Idaho, it says right here that you were the conductor of that last piece, which was very impressive. What is the name of it? What were we listening to?
This is an extraordinary piece by composer Gerard Tate called Resolution, which is actually the seventh movement of a beautiful cantata called Standing Bear. And I'm reading from the notes of the composer that the seventh tableau is the climax of the work, in which Standing Bear expresses his personal resolution to the world that all men are created equal. Mm. So he builds this incredible crescendo with the strings. The violas are playing this beautiful melody all the time. Fa, re, mi. Just as like a beautiful ostinato. Mm. There are drums there. There is also a piano. Mm. And then, of course, our wonderful Bill Sharp creates this incredible crescendo at the end. I think it's a very, very powerful
Bill piece. Sharp is such a great singer, and you guys have worked together for years. So here he was, and this was post-classical ensemble. It sounds beautiful. This was in the National Cathedral, was it?
That was in the Washington National Cathedral.
Yeah, it's
which
a
also
wonderful
helped
acoustic.
Immensely with the acoustics.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to Post-Classical. As usual, we have a cast of three in the studio today. Angel Gil Ordóñez, our conductor, whom we just heard from. Joe Horowitz, whose brainstorms create this program. And I'm Bill McLaughlin. So, Joe, what are we doing today?
This is our second show we call Native American Inspirations, using material recorded in concert at our week-long festival in D.C., Native American Inspirations. The first show dealt with the Indianist movement, and today we're dealing with contemporary composers, Native and non-Native. In other words, Bill, we have surveyed 125 years of American music inspired by Native America.
For you folks who are having trouble making it out, I thought, as we were listening to this last week, that word is Indianist. What's an Indianist?
The Indianists self-identified as composers who, taking up Dvorak's challenge, were going to attempt to create an American concert idiom inspired by the ceremony and song of Native America.
And Angel, you told us that the composer of this piece, which we just heard Bill Sharp singing, Resolution, is Gerard Tate. And is Mr. Tate Native American himself?
Yes, Mr. Tate is Native American. And joining us once again, as he did last week, is our good friend Delta David Geyer, the music director of the South Dakota Symphony, somebody well acquainted with Gerard Tate.
David, great to have you on board again today.
Thank you very much.
So, David, tell us about Gerard.
Jared Impichichaha Tate is a Chickasaw composer. He lives in Oklahoma City. I was actually a South Dakota Symphony Composer in Residence for a while. We've played quite a bit of Jared's music. I have to trace his lineage back to Lewis Ballard, who was also an American Indian composer from Oklahoma. So he was the grandfather of the Native American composers that are working today, Michael Davids and Ravi Chacon and others. It really feels strange to have any program about classical music, which is American Indian, and not mention Lewis Ballard. So Jared is all about expressing his Chickasaw identity through the music he composes. Even a piece he wrote for us called Victory Songs was about Lakota people, but he wrote it as a salute from his Chickasaw heritage to the Lakota people. So very, very much defined by his American Indian identity.
David, it does my heart good to hear the name Lewis Ballard. I did a lot of his work with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. There was a ballet that an orchestra piece called Incident at Wounded Knee.
It dated
back to the historic and terrible calamity there at the end of the 19th century, as well as the political events around the 1970s. And we not only played it all up and down, we also made a ballet out of it with Lois Houghton, who choreographed it beautifully with the Minnesota Dance Theater. And I love Lewis Ballard. He came up to St. Paul many times. Fun to hang out with. And boy, does he have the wildest bunch of friends he always brought along with him.
So, I never got to meet the man, but boy, what a heritage he's left behind.
So Jared Tate, sort of long-distance derivative from Lewis Ballard, can we hear some more of his music? What now, do you think, Joe?
So the biggest piece on our big Wednesday night concert was Shackamaxon by Jared Tate, a two-movement string orchestra piece, and we're going to hear the first movement and then the second movement with intervening commentary because this music is highly programmatic. Angel, what was it like absorbing and performing Shackamaxon by Jared Tate?
Well, I think we agree that was kind of the discovery of the whole festival. To me, it was an incredible musical experience. Before talking about the piece, I would like to read the note that the composer wrote in the score so that we put the music, the inspiration into the context. So Tate writes here, Shackamaxon is the historic Lenape Indian village that bordered the current city of Philadelphia.
Right.
It was there under an old elm tree. The tree is very important. In that tree, Chief Tamanend was a signatory to the 1682 treaty between William Penn and the Lenape Indians. The old elm tree blew down in a storm in 1810. And is now the location of a park named Penn Treaty Park. Dedicated to Sharon Nolte and the descendants of Chief Tamanend, Shackamaxon is a remembrance of that old village and the tree under which the treaty was signed. So this is a very descriptive piece. I think he has written the American Metamorphosen. This is, to me, was the discovery, the sound.
Like Strauss Metamorphosis,
yes,
is what you're saying.
Making comparisons is very difficult. This is, I don't think it's offensive, but it might be. Some composers don't like these comparisons. But also the fact that every single instrument is playing different things too, as in Metamorphosis.
And they're all string instruments.
String instruments. Mm-hmm. So we have 16 players here. Every instrument is playing different pitches. Sometimes playing in unison. But especially the atmosphere that he creates with the strings is what is really struck completely me. Maybe we should listen to the first movement and then we can comment.
Just taking from your notion that it's like Strauss's piece, Metamorphosen. My memory of Metamorphosen was that it was written just after the war in which Germany and Austria were soundly defeated.
Absolutely.
So it's a sort of memorial piece.
Yep.
And in Strauss's Metamorphosen, he quotes from, as I remember, Eroica, Symphony Funeral March.
Yep.
Any kind of tunes in Jared Tate's piece?
In the first movement, there is a lot of liturgical, in my opinion. There is a lot of liturgy there. Actually, it's so interesting that he uses the devices of the instruments in fourths. They are playing in fourths most of the time, which reminds us to the Guillaume de Machaut, for example, Mass.
So the polyphony of the late Middle Ages, Renaissance.
Absolutely. There is a lot of liturgy there, and he does this incredible chords in fourths and fifths. Mm-hmm. So there is this religious
element
there that I think is fascinating, together with the sonorities of the harmonics, etc. And then, of course, there is an Indian melody in the violas that are playing in fourths.
Fantastic.
Here's two sentences, just quickly, from the composer. The first movement is the composer's imagining of sitting under the tree and feeling the presence of the village's original ancestors. Fragments of an old Lenape social song are heard throughout this movement.
Yeah. Actually, I know all about this. I grew up in Philadelphia. There's a Shackamaxon Street, which runs through a thing called Fishtown, which runs right down to the Delaware River. That's where the original setting of the Shackamaxon village. There's one more little bit. Years ago, when I conducted the KC Symphony, I used to love to go look in the Flint Hills in Kansas. Along the way, I discovered a monument named Shackamaxon. It was to an Indian prince who was transferred to the Kansas Territory in the 1830s. Around the same time that Andrew Jackson was moving out the Cherokee people. Interesting, isn't it? So now let's go back. Here's William Penn showing up. This is the first that these poor people in Pennsylvania, as it has come to be called, Penn's Woods, they didn't call it that, and they call themselves Lenape. Is actually the pronunciation.
Lenape.
Yeah, down there. So here are the Lenape people, and they're sitting under this great elm tree thinking, and then in come the English. It could have been worse. William Penn was a member of the Society of Friends. They were not so belligerent as some of the other configurations. Let's hear this section now from the first movement of Gerard Tate's Shackamaxon. Music of Gerard Tate from a big piece called Shakamaxa. We heard the end of the first movement. That was post-classical ensemble under Angel Gil Ordóñez. Very interesting, very beautiful music, very moving music. This is a picture of an Indian village along the Delaware River just prior to the arrival of William Penn, 1682.
Very beautiful. And then, you know, this has been our third season at the Washington National Cathedral, which is delicate acoustics, so to say. There is music that works well. There is music that doesn't work that well.
Stuff that's really fast and jumpy would be hard to hear, I should think.
And there is music that works extremely well.
Uh-huh.
So I cannot imagine performing this piece in a different space right now.
Uh-huh.
Because it was perfect for this resonances. But even the second movement that we are going to listen now, which is very fast and very heavy, and uses actually dowels in some
dowel
parts.
Rides.
Yes. Sticks in order to represent the moccasin game that the dance represents. The sound was fantastic in the cathedral because Tate has a preference for the lower register rather than the higher register. And you are going to see this in the second moment. So having a very heavy bass and cello section works beautifully, even in fast movements. And then this second moment has an incredible chorale in the middle that brings us back to the first movement. I mean, it's really organic. I'm very, very impressed by this composer. I'm happy that David said that he also considers him one of the most impressive composers of his generation, you know, of the Native American Indians, because this is a voice that needs to be heard. I mean, this is American music at the highest level.
Let's hear some more of this, and then we'll ask David Geyer to tell us even more about the composer.
Let's listen to the note on the second movement.
Yes, please.
As a composer, the second movement is very energetic and rhythmic and abstracts Lenape skin dance and moccasin game music. Moccasin games can be very intense and have always fostered healthy competition within American Indian communities. This movement is meant to depict the natural banter of the game and to honor the determination and perseverance of the Lenape people.
So here's music of Gerard Tate under Angel Gil Ordóñez. Here we go, second movement. Thank you. Jacquemaxin, the conclusion of a big orchestra piece by Gerard Tate that was Angel Gil Ordóñez conducting post-classical ensemble and performance at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. Well, now I want to know more about this composer, Gerard Tate, and I think we have with us today a man who probably knows more about him than I do, David Geyer. You're the conductor of the South Dakota Symphony, and you've known Gerard Tate for a long time. Tell us about him.
Well, Gerard, I love working with Gerard because he is so, so focused on honoring his American Indian heritage. Every bit of his music is tied to it. I mean, it is a marriage between, as you've just heard, it's a marriage between, you know, Native American inspiration and it could be Prokofiev, you know, some Bartok. Things like that. You can also hear his other influences in there, no question, but he's uncompromising in his expression. First time we worked with Gerard was in 2013. It was a Music Alive residency, which is a program from out of New Music USA and the League of American Orchestras, you know, places a composer with an orchestra for a period of time. And then later, Gerard ended up being our actual composer in residence for a while as well, and had a beautiful relationship with many of our players, and including our Lakota Music Project native partners here, Lakota Dakota, as well. So he's really been integral to our work together. The soundscape that you just experienced by listening to this is kind of classic Tate. The first movement in particular reminds me that pretty much in every score of Gerard I've ever done, he has an instruction for the string orchestra to play without vibrato throughout the piece, which is not very favorably looked upon by the string orchestra. The players, you know, they look at that and say, you can't really mean that. But there's no vibrato whatsoever.
You can find that in Sibelius as well. It's not like it's an invention, but it's a very clear sound, and it takes you back to another age.
He wants this kind of iciness, which he obviously achieves. And Angel, he did a great job.
Thank
with
you.
The post-classical ensemble with that. I mean, they just sounded fabulous.
David, you said that Gerard is living in Oklahoma now. Where is he from to begin with, and what's his training? Do you know?
He comes out of Cleveland Institute in terms of being a pianist and composer, but he's from Oklahoma. I think his mother was originally from Wyoming, if I'm not mistaken. She was a dancer, like ballet dancer. Mm-hmm. He came out of the theater world, so a lot of his early music was written actually for ballet, but also a lot of vocal music. The piece he composed for us in 2013 was called Victory Songs, and it's a song cycle for baritone and orchestra in the Lakota language.
Hmm. What's the Lakota Project? You brought that up a couple of times.
Lakota Music Project is something that we initiated. I hesitate to even call it a program of the South Dakota Symphony anymore, because it's developed into something that's much more collaborative. But it was initiated by us over 10 years ago with the idea of addressing racial tensions in this part of the country. Hmm. After living in New York for 20 years and coming to this job, it was quite a surprise to me to find out that racial prejudice in South Dakota was against Native Americans, not against blacks or Hispanics.
You know, it's funny that, you know, Sherman Alexie, wonderful Indian author, yes. Very, very funny, yes. But he talks about the difference between Lakota and Dakota, and there's one part of the, I can't, which is, one's more Eastern, the other's slightly Western. One of them has a hard time pronouncing a thing, so the joke is, what happens when your tire blows? You get a bedow out. Okay. That's,
oh, no.
That's
Ouch.
Real Native American humor.
Ouch. That is. Yeah, that's pretty specific.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're not doing Martin Luther King Day concerts. So what are we doing? How do we actually serve our community the best way that we possibly can? And so we started with meetings with the eastern part of the state is Dakota, western part is Lakota.
Right.
So we started with some leaders within the American Indian community in South Dakota. And, of course, as a music director, I came in with all kinds of ideas about ways we could collaborate, but I was met with total distrust. You know, what's in it for you? Who's making money? You know, just
Look at the history. Yeah, I mean, if everyone dealt with, anyway, I'm sure what you're doing is creating harmony, and I'm so glad to have it. You mentioned the victory songs. It looks like we have them up now in our program. Do we do? So what are we going to hear? What are the victory songs?
The victory songs is a set of five songs plus an introduction. It's a Chickasaw composer honoring five different Lakota warriors. So Red Cloud and Sitting Bull, you know, fairly familiar names. And each of these heroes gets a movement.
Mm-hmm.
It's a baritone who's singing in Lakota We had quite a time with that. The baritone is Stephen Bryant. Wonderful, wonderful baritone. Works a lot with Tan Dun and, you know, does a lot of, you know, varied repertoire. But he'd never sung in Lakota before. So we had special coaches come in and all of that. And our American Indians in the audience said that they could understand every word. So, you know, that's great.
That's high praise.
That's right. It really is.
Yeah.
So what you have there is the first section, which is an introduction, and then the first movement, the first song, which is Red Cloud.
Well, let's listen now. The recording we have, I understand you are conducting, David, and this is your band, the South Dakota Symphony. This was the premiere performance.
Yes, it was in January 2013, and the baritone is Stephen Bryant. Yeah, it was widely acclaimed, and Jared actually wrote two versions of it. This is the full orchestra version. We also have a chamber orchestra version so that we can tour it and play it on reservations and things as part of our Lakota Music Project.
So here we go. Music of Jared Tate, Victory Songs.
Thank you.
Music of Gerard Tate, terrific music, victory songs. That was Stephen Bryant singing with the South Dakota Symphony under its music director, Delta David Geyer, to give you your full name. Their band sounds terrific, man.
It sounds great.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I'm pretty proud of them.
Yeah, I mean, here's Angel, who knows a thing or two about Kentucky.
It sounds terrific.
Okay. Music of Gerard Tate. Well, that brings us to the end of our first hour, but don't go away because we got a lot more music coming up here on Post Classical. Interesting, none of these composers are people I know, but I think that's about to change for the positive. There's a wonderful oboist named Jeffrey Paul who plays with your orchestra and is a very good composer. Also a man named Brian Akipa who plays the Indian flute. We'll hear that and more here on Post Classical.